Who needs an amusement park when you're a Vikings fan? What a roller coaster week for your Minnesota Vikings, and we'll cover it all for you this morning. Let's start back all the way at the beginning, or at today, and then we'll work our way back throughout the show, because this morning the Vikings signed Stephon Gilmore, and this is, I think, Pete, a pretty smart signing and a low risk cornerback that is coming off a year in Dallas. And which, you know, listen, it's not his best. He's 33 years old, but I think immediately upgrades this defense with the signing and signals to me that, A, I think this franchise truly believes, and the front office truly believes, that they're approaching their window here to win. Whether it's this year, whether it's next year, if he plays well, then maybe you sign him again. If he's not what he was of old, then it's no big deal other than the $10 million it costs, I think, to sign him for the year. But he's coming off a pretty good year. Pete, what do you think about this?
Is he a geriatric at this point? No, I'm just kidding.
33. I mean,
when you do look at our secondary, though, you've got Harrison Smith, right? He's 35 years mm-hmm. old. Let's call Stephon Gilmore 34 because he will be in 1 month. You know, it's interesting though, Dave. It's not a huge risk to take this guy. I think he's great. He's had a really good career. Is he at the end of his career? I'd say he's really close, just because of age, and it does start to happen, and it happens pretty quickly, I think, for a lot of the players. But the only thing that sort of is a little bit of a pushback for me, they paid him a nice chunk of money. I didn't know that they'd have that kind of room to be able to afford it, but I know it's $7 million guaranteed, but it's a $10 million contract. It's a one-year deal, right? So it's, we didn't want to pay Dalvin Cook when he was 28 years old, but we're paying for a 34-year-old cornerback. I don't know. That's where my balance goes back and forth, and I'm trying to figure out what the general manager oftentimes is doing as far as some of the decision making with the Vikings, whether it be draft or sometimes with just the players themselves on age and some of the reasons that we hear that we lose players, but all of a sudden when we really need one, we gain a player. I like his athleticism. Is he the same guy he was 5-6 years ago at New England? Absolutely not. But he did have a good year with Dallas last year.
And to me, this is very much like a Patrick Peterson signing, right? When they signed mm-hmm. him in 2021, I believe he was 31 years old. Yeah. He had two pretty good seasons for the Minnesota Vikings before he went to Pittsburgh in 2023. And I think, if I'm correct, his last season here overlapped with Brian Flores. Is that right? Let's see here. I'm just trying to look real quick. So 23. Yeah, 23. Sounds his last right. season yeah. here overlapped. No, sorry. They did not play together. They did not coach and play together. However, Patrick Peterson, I think, outperformed what they hoped. He had a great two seasons here. I believe that Stephon Gilmore, I know they were – Flores and he were together in New England. Flores was not – he was a linebackers coach at the time, so I don't know how much they had together crossover. But he had some really good years in New England. But he was coming off a last year in 2023. He had 68 tackles and two interceptions.
Yeah.
No, I mean, is it his 2019 Patriots season when he had six picks, or 2016 when he had five for the Bills? No. But is he immediate upgrade over what they had, especially considering some of the injuries? I think so. Did you really want, Fabian Moreau? Did you really want Dwight McLaughlin starting game one? No, of course you didn't. But now you got Stephon Gilmore. And again, I think to me this signals, hey, we know that we're in the window. We know that this is a flyer. Maybe this works. Maybe it doesn't. It's an expensive flyer. It is. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to try to be competitive this year, and we haven't talked about this a lot, but if this is really, Kwesi Dofamensa and Kevin O'Connell are getting out of that, hey, we're new here window mm-hmm. to the you better start winning or else window. And I think, to me, this signals that they're getting closer to that they need to start thinking about what they're going to do here and if they're going to be able to have some longevity here as well.
Yeah, and obviously we had to make some kind of a move, in my opinion. So I'm not saying this is a terrible move. And it's a must do move. So it puts us in a position. 34 years old ish does kind of make me a little bit apprehensive. I know he had a good year last year, but that let's be honest. The Dallas Cowboys defense everywhere was good last year. I mean, they're outside linebackers, they're blitzers, their defensive line, their defense was really one of the pieces of the puzzle that I think was very, very good for Dallas. So it puts us in a pretty interesting spot. We needed to get somebody. And if this is the best that we had out there, I think it's fine. And I say, a lot of it for me is just, wow, that's just, it seems like a fairly extreme amount of money. And I know it's a 1 year. We're just taking a rental, right? Because we've had so many issues and we've always drafted corners and we just have had so little success that it's been absolutely incredible. But I think he can step in there and play. At what level is he going to get beat once in a while? He might be, just because the receivers in the NFL right now as a group probably is the best we have ever seen in the NFL, I think.
So when we signed, when the Vikings signed Patrick Peterson a couple years ago, does Stephon Gilmore, in your mind, if you're comparing the two of them, who is Gilmore as good as Peterson was when he came in, or do you feel like he's farther along? Age-wise, obviously, it's a difference, but in terms of skill and what they're coming into?
I think they're very, very similar. I thought Patrick Peterson, they gave up on him a little bit too early. Not the Vikings, previous teams. So I liked the fact that we got – matter of fact, I was disappointed when we decided to walk away from Patrick Peterson because I thought he was I thought he was one of the better players we've had. I liked his height. I liked his speed. I liked his ability, his ball skills. All of that, I think, made him an incredible corner for a really long time. And, you know, I feel like Stephon Gilmore is close to that. I don't think he's at the level when we first got Patrick Peterson up here. I don't think he's there right now where Patrick Peterson was when we grabbed him.
But to me, one of the things that excites me, and I should also add, if you out there, do you like this signing? Do you hate this signing? Does it change anything about how you feel the season is going to go? The stylesfinancial.com talk and text line is 651-461-9226. I would love to see, I want to see what Brian Flores can do with him. I mean, you and I both agree, Pete, we've talked about this, that in terms of a defensive mind, Brian Flores is one of the best in the NFL and does things with players that I think other guys can't do. So I'm excited to see where Gilmore fits into his scheme.
One other thing I'd love to point out is, and I think everybody saw it yesterday, but it was great to see Lewis Cine finally show us a little something, right? I mean, it's been years, and I know he had the injury, but at some point you got to say, okay, well, what can he do for us? And he looked really, really solid, fast, aggressive. He played probably his best NFL game. I know it's preseason, but his best NFL game that he's ever played. I think that maybe... Is he a guy who's making that next step? I don't know.
Against, unfortunately, a Browns team, and I don't think anybody played many of their starters yesterday. In fact, I think there were more fans in the stands than starters on the field, and that's or more starters on the bench than fans in the stands, I should say, because it looked like a quarter full, which is not great. I thought Lewis Cine played better. When we talked to Alec Lewis last week, and he thought that it just might be time to cut ties with him. From a coaching standpoint, Peter, you've been kind of in this scenario. This is a tough spot now to put the coaching staff, because up until this point, he has not shown any flashes like this. And all of a sudden, in the second preseason game, he does. So now you start to doubt, right? Do we cut this guy loose and have him go to another team? Or has he shown enough? But it's just one game.
Yeah.
Right. So what do you make of this now?
It's one game, but at the same time, and I think we've heard our head coach talk about this like so many others, but he's talking about looking at these guys in practice, looking at these guys when they do have like the drills that they were doing against the Cleveland Browns and some of the aggressiveness that was going on with the Cleveland Browns. I think when you look at all of that, that's what the coach is looking at, the GM's looking at. They'll get together and decide whether or not somebody's going to be on the team. It's not about just that, to your point. It's not just about what he did during the game in Cleveland, although that was good. And it was against, you know, obviously the starters are all sitting on the sideline, but I think at least he finally showed us something. Yeah. He showed us when he's on the field that he actually is the player maybe that we drafted a few years ago. So I think it's something where he finally made a step. And I've been as critical as anybody about that draft pick anyway.
Yeah.
But at least he has stepped up and showed us a little something. And if he's done enough at some of the practices, some of the skills that they are working on when they're down there with Cleveland, and he showed a little something, he might have a good argument on why he shouldn't be a big part of this team.
We can talk about that with Matthew Collar, who's going to join us coming up next as we continue to break down the giant preseason game number two for the Vikings. No, I'm just kidding. It's so not. And I listen, I'm happy football's back, and I'm happy that the preseason is here. But there's just so little sometimes. And clearly after the week the Vikings have had, Kevin O'Connell's like, no, we're not playing almost any starters tomorrow. We've Addison's down with an injury. McCarthy's gone for the year. I mean, it's like, all right, everybody's out. Everybody's gone. Put in a couple guys, and let's just get out of here without any injuries tomorrow. So today we will chat with Matthew Collar coming up next. We'll talk more about the Vikings victory yesterday in Cleveland. If you have thoughts on that and on the signing of Stephen Gilmore, hit us up on the stylesfinancial.com talking text line 651-461-9226. Matthew Collar joins us around the corner. We'll be right back. Matthew Collar, our good friend, Purple Insider, joins us this morning. Matthew, I want to start with – good morning, by the way, joining us in the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. I want to start with the news, the big news of Stephon Gilmore. Your immediate reaction when you heard about this morning was?
I was not very surprised. I knew that from what I had heard that they really wanted Stephon Gilmore and that their offer was significantly higher than any other team for him. And then after I was in Cleveland for 2 days watching joint practices and watching the Vikings defense absolutely maul the Cleveland Browns offense over and over and over again in practice, I thought, yeah, maybe they'll even up that offer a little bit more for Stephon Gilmore because this defense is truly, a good cornerback play away from being a top 10 type of defense. And with Brian Flores, being able to get some more talent in here, Andrew Van Ginkle, Blake Cashman, the way they've developed some players. Ivan Pace has looked really good so far in training camp. They've got a little more depth up front at the edge rusher and on the interior of the defensive line, but really just that one spot. And Byron Murphy is a solid NFL corner. It's the other outside spots a little in question with Shaq Griffin not practicing at all since the second day of training camp. So I thought, this team probably realizes if it's going to compete for the playoffs, it has to do it a little more with defense than it has in some previous seasons. And Stephon Gilmore, his last three seasons of play, I know he's older, but his last three seasons of play have all been above average. He's played 2,000 snaps the last two seasons, so he's really aged well for a cornerback. And they must believe that it's still there with Stephon Gilmore.
Yeah, it's a little bit surprising, the amount of money. Do you think that we – I understand what you're saying completely, but did we need to overpay probably the rest of the league to the levels that we did? Or was that not ever a worry?
Well, I think they did need to overpay because when you think about a player of Stephon Gilmore's stature, defensive MVP, he's been around for a long time, and he's been very good the last few seasons – I think, there's probably other teams that are thought of as a little more Super Bowl contenders than the Vikings that put in smaller offers for him that don't necessarily need him but wouldn't mind having him. The Vikings are more in a position of needing him based on what they have in the secondary. And he really doesn't have to. At his age, he's made enough money in his career. He could just say, yeah, whatever. Or I'll go ring chasing and try to sign with Kansas City or something. But why it doesn't really matter is because the Vikings have a lot of cap space that they're not going to use after this, and it's a one-year contract. So you give him his $10 million now, and then he becomes a free agent at the end of the year. It has no impact whatsoever on the long term, and they had this cap space. We're about to start the season, so it's not like they were going to make seven more signings. They just used available cap space that they had, and the way that they've set up their cap over the last two off seasons was another thing that allowed them to be able to do this. because before, you know, the last few seasons when Kirk was here, they were scraping the bottom of the barrel. How can we make an extra $2 million to sign somebody? So now they're in a little better shape there, and they're able to bring in someone who recently has been a very, very good player.
Matthew Collar joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Matt, this to me, this signals at least that we understand the front office feels like this team can be very competitive in 2024, despite the fact that they lost their rookie quarterback, J.J. McCarthy, this week. To me, in my mind, I was like, okay, this is a bummer for him, but I never felt, and I've said this all along, I felt like from the beginning of the season, this is going to be Sam Darnold's job, and he was going to have to lose it some way at some point. Does the fact that J.J. McCarthy is out of the mix now, does it change everything for this front office, or do you get the feeling like, okay, it's that they feel like, okay, this is kind of a blip, but he's going to be okay, and we were looking at him for the future anyway?
Yeah, I mean, as far as it relates to Stephon Gilmore, just timeline-wise, they already had made an offer to him before J.J. McCarthy was known to be out for the season. So they were already thinking that they should be competitive. And the owners of this team have been extremely clear. Every time Mark Wilf has talked to us, he said, this is not a rebuild type of thing. We want this team to compete for the division. They know the division's tough, but the expectation is to make the playoffs, even if, you know, the Vegas odds don't think that that's going to happen for this team. But, you know, I think that what J.J. McCarthy provided was a button to push for Kevin O'Connell, where, all right, season's kind of going bad with Sam Darnold. Let's get J.J. McCarthy in there and, you know, bring that excitement that goes along with it. And then if he looks pretty good, which I think he would have through the end of the season, then you can always point to that, regardless of what your record is, and say, we're on our way, trust us, give it time, all those things. And, of course, you know, keep the fan base excited to see J.J. McCarthy and everything else. Now that is off the table, and you're just riding the Sam Darnold roller coaster. And that it does, I think it does add a little bit more pressure because you don't have this thing where you can always say, but the future, am I right? Now, I think McCarthy having that great game before he got injured was still very helpful because Minnesota got to see what J.J. McCarthy had been doing in practice over and over again on a daily basis and why the Vikings are comfortable calling him their franchise future quarterback. But at the same time, like that as a coach, you want to have that extra thing, and now you just really don't. You just have to ride Sam Darnold. And when I saw him practicing against the Browns, we saw the ups and downs that you would have expected for Sam Darnold for his entire career. Some really great throws and some unexplainable interceptions. And I know the Browns have a really good defense, but it's going to be a little bit different, I think, than watching Kirk Cousins in previous years.
So real quick, Matt, I know we're getting up against the time frame, but I'm just really curious, as far as you're there every day, you see these guys, you understand the team very well. Who stands out for you? Is there anybody or any couple of guys that you say, you know what, this guy has made the next step, and it's going to be really fun to watch him this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think like you're probably kind of pointing a little more toward younger players who are improving. I mentioned Ivan Pace. I've noticed that. But as far as what's really popped out to me, you know, that number 18 is pretty good. You mean you should get a jersey of his. But what has really stood out to me in particular is the edge rushers, just the entire unit. I think that unit might be one of the best in the entire NFL. Jihad Ward is a guy who I'm interested to see if he makes the team, but Patrick Jones has looked improved from last season in maybe a new role. But Dallas Turner has stood out a ton throughout this entire thing. And Andrew Van Ginkle and Jonathan Grenard, those guys were not on the marquee because they drafted a quarterback this offseason, but those were two huge signings for them. Mm-hmm. And they were wreaking havoc in Cleveland. They've been causing problems for the Vikings offense throughout training camp. And I think that having that be much deeper than it was before is all respect to Danielle Hunter, but Danielle was asked to do everything all the time. Mm-hmm. Now they have a bunch of guys that they can mix and match at that position that could make them a lot better in terms of a overall pass rush versus what they were last year.
I'm not stealing Pete's question, his take, but I want to borrow it. He talked earlier about Lewis Cine and what he did yesterday. He had a much better game, probably one of his best games, I think, that we've seen him play despite the injury. Does one game do enough to move him up far enough on the depth chart to make the cut, or do you still think when the preseason ends, he's on the outside of the bubble?
Yeah, I don't believe that that's going to put him on the team. I mean, maybe it's possible because Kwesi Adofo-Mensah drafted him. He wants to try that one more time, yeah. But there hasn't really been any feeling that he's making progress in practice. We've seen him get, you know, a ton of reps, but anytime, I think they want to give him every opportunity because he's gotten a ton of reps, but it's all been with the second team, nothing with the first team. And it, when a guy is getting a sack in the fourth quarter of a preseason game that the coach does not care about, he cared about the joint practices. I think it tells you where that player stands. And, you know, a tipped interception, a sack where no one blocks you. I'm not really sure that these things are enough to move the needle with Lewis Cine. But it is funny because they have one of the best safety units in the entire NFL. He's just probably not going to be included in it.
Matthew Coller, Purple Insider. Thanks, buddy. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks, Matthew.
Yep, you too, guys.
Thanks, Matthew Coller. Good insight. Good stuff. Lewis Cine. Pete, I mean, we wanted it, right? We were hoping that maybe he'd make the cut, but that's a great point. You know, fourth quarter, what are you going to do?
Yeah. That's kind of what we thought, I think. Yeah. You know, I mean, I think we were just wondering, you know, up front and close, what did he really look like? And mm-hmm. I think Matthew just basically gave us the lowdown right there.
Well, and interesting, too, that he said, and I think you probably know a lot about more about this than I do, the fact that you go to Cleveland for these joint practices, that mm-hmm. that's more important to the coaching staff than what's done in a preseason game.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah, the joint practices, that's where the analysis really happens. It's the time where you've got all the – everybody's full. They have the full uniforms on. They got the shoulder pads actually on. They're not just standing around in their helmets, you know, in the warm weather. And they actually can do some of the stuff that they can do, you know, one-on-one and everything else. And that's where I think you either make or break on the team.
We'll take a quick break, come back, and we will do the fast break. You're listening to The Huddle on E3O with Josh.
Yeah, with me. That's
you like that?
It's cute. That's
that was good.
thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, with 6 weeks left in the regular season, the AL Central is slowly getting tighter and tighter between the Twins and the Guardians. We'll talk more about this, obviously, more in depth later in the show. But after Cleveland falling to the Brew Crew last night, the Twins are now just two games back. Dave, we'll start with you on this one. Whether it's injuries, failure to score, with runners in scoring position, what in your mind is the biggest obstacle facing this Twins team from getting the Central pennant?
Consistency. I listen, they're two games back. They've been 2.5 to 2 games back for what seems like months now. But this team has to put it together for the entire time. You know, it's like win three, lose one. Win 3 out of 5, lose another one. But the schedule, if I'm recalling, and I don't have it in front of me, but this last month of the season for them is a really winnable schedule. And so they have to be able to be consistent with their play, with the pitching, with the hitting, with all of it. But it's consistency. That's what it is. They have to get on a streak here, and then you have to hope that Cleveland runs into a roadblock at some point.
And Josh, I'll just add this. I totally agree with Dave on the consistency side of it. I think the problem that we still look at every time we look at the Twins, we get excited, but we look at the Twins and we say, well, have they beat teams that have a winning record? And the answer is generally no. We have beat some. We beat Kansas City. We did pretty well with them, but and Cleveland. But the reality has been, when you look around, we've just not really come through. I think the pitching's got to be a little bit better. You just wonder, did we do enough when we got to that trade deadline? Did we get aggressive enough? A lot of people didn't want to change it. I personally did. I still think that they needed a pitcher, but some of the pitching is improving for sure. I mean, and Bailey looks fantastic, but that's just one name.
There you go. There you go. Hopefully they can get the W today. We'll see what happens there. I know, unless you are Mr. Matthew Coller and are doing this for a living, not a lot of people really dive too deep into preseason football and probably honestly haven't watched much of it. I know I haven't. I don't know about you guys, but we're now 2 weeks into it for the NFL, and before you know it, the games will actually start to count and matter. Pete, we'll start with you here. Which quarterback has popped out to you the most? And if you haven't watched a whole lot, which quarterback are you most excited to see this season as far as rookie QBs?
Ah, well, ironically, we were kind of kicking that around, yeah. And I can tell you that Bo Nix is everything that I thought he was at Oregon. He looks great. Now, granted, it's preseason. We always have to qualify and say, yes, it's preseason. This isn't, you're not going against all the starters and all the rest of it. But as rookies, these guys coming in, I think he and Caleb Williams, obviously first pick in the draft for a reason, but Caleb Williams has looked great. He's done a great job of spreading the ball around, and it just tells you a little bit more about how I think the division with the Vikings is a lot tougher than people probably realize. When you look at the quarterback play within our own division, it's impressive. And I think some of these young quarterbacks are living up to everything we expected that they were going to do. Even going out to Washington and looking at how their quarterback is playing, another young guy, has done a really nice job. Have they put up a lot of points? Not really, but I think that they've played very well. So I think there's reason to be excited about Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix and all of the different quarterbacks that are rookies. They're really impressive so far.
Honestly, this, and you're 100% right, this might be, and we were just talking about this might be the most exciting class of quarterbacks that we've seen in a really, really long time, at least for my money, Pete. I'm super excited to see him. I've said this all along. I wanted Michael Penix Jr. here in Minnesota, so I'm not going off the board by saying that I want to see how he looks in Atlanta. I think he had one game. He was 9 of 17, 104 yards, played about a quarter. Atlanta's apparently seen what they need to see out of him. They love him, but they got to now see, and we were talking about this, they got to see what they have in Kirk Cousins. Like, you got to see where this Achilles is, where is his health. And clearly they're not like gung-ho, yep, he's going to be the guy, or else they wouldn't assign Michael Penix Jr. So I am really intrigued to watch that quarterback battle, and would not surprise me the least bit if we see Penix Jr. at some point this season.
Yeah.
We're going to circle back around to baseball just real quick for this one. With the 2024 Olympics well behind us now, about a week out, we look ahead to L.A. in 2028, where we will see the return of baseball. MLB is still kind of up in the air. Dave, do you think Rob Manfred will permit this to take place, given the extensive 162 and subsequently almost 200 games, if you count postseason, for MLB returning? Do you think it'll happen?
He should. I don't know if it will, but he should, because it's great for the game. It is great for building fan support. And let's be honest, Major League Baseball needs to increase their fan support. We've talked extensively. They've done so much in the past few years to speed up the game, to make it a better fan experience. If they miss out on the opportunity to showcase baseball on the world stage and what the U.S. can do, that's a huge miss for him. It helps in every other sport. The NBA, granted, it's not in season, but the WNBA does it. Again, half the games, but they make it work. I think once every 4 years, extending the season by a little bit, or maybe starting it earlier, or figuring something else out to showcase baseball and Major League's best on the world stage, if they don't take that opportunity, it is a massive miss on my part.
I agree with you, Dave. And when you talk about commissioners, I actually have the most respect for Rob Manfred of all of them, through the NFL. I can't really speak as much to the NHL, but the NFL and NBA and what happens in Major League Baseball, I think Rob Manfred has really done a great job, like you said, speeding up the game, making things a little bit tighter, a little bit more exciting for fans, grabbing some of the younger people in there as folks that want to be a part of Major League Baseball and watching it. He has outdone, I think, every other commissioner that exists. So pretty excited about what he's been doing. I think he'll make the right decision.
And last but not least, next week, it's already here, gentlemen. Week zero starts next week. Didn't know that was a thing until I think last year. I was so excited for college football to start, and I said, oh, wait, there's nobody really playing. Cool. But with that being said, I don't remember last time we had this much of a shakeup among the different conferences. So I'll just kind of give you this, broader question. Which conference do you think is the strongest going into this new season? We have Big Ten, SEC, ACC, Pacific Conference. Everything's just being shaken up heading into this new phase of college football. And obviously you have the college football playoff being implemented in a more expanded version this year. So which conference do you think will have the strongest showing this time come January?
Dave?
Oh, you want me to go first?
Sure.
I mean, sure. I don't know. I'll say the Big Ten simply because they just have so many teams that are good. Yeah. I mean, you know, you got Ohio State, Michigan, you're adding Oregon, you're adding like UCLA, all these teams that are legitimately really great teams. I know I've all long been an SEC guy. I truly have. Like, I've always said SEC is the best conference in the country, but I really think now the Big Ten pushes that just a little bit. But I guess it's probably still, I guess, long answer to say SEC still to me will always be the number one in college football, but Big Ten's right there.
Well, the SEC, I've got this one. It'll shock you guys a little bit probably, but I've got Ole Miss and Georgia playing in the national championship game at the end of the season. So and Ole Miss being a long shot, but really? SEC is incredible. I will say this. The Big Ten upgrade when you put in Washington, Oregon, USC, UCLA is absolutely amazing. And what we've got with Penn State already, we and Michigan and Ohio State. Michigan, we really don't know what we've got exactly, but certainly we do with Ohio State. Ohio State will be incredibly, they will have the closest shot, I think, in the Big Ten to getting to the national championship game.
And there you go. Well done.
Josh, great questions. Thank you.
I try.
What's up? Is the music going again?
No. The great silence job. Means we're done. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We're done. Coming up next, Pete, what happened to you? We'll talk about it coming up next. We see this somber music. I know. We're sad. Hour one is in the books. If you missed any of our first hour, including Matt Collar, who came on at 10:20, check out our podcasts wherever you get your podcasts or on the free Odyssey app. Quick note, you get an extra half hour of us today. I know. You're excited. We'll be on until 12:30 before Inside Twins picks us up after that. Thank you, sir.
Johnny Cash.
It was Johnny Cash, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's Hurt. It's Nine Inch Nails version of a cover of Hurt by Johnny Cash because Pete hurt himself.
Nine Inch. Yeah, well, I was going to ask you, like, we haven't even talked about this off air yet, so this is new to me, too. What happened to you this week?
I proved my stubbornness over the last 41 years because in 1983, Dave, you were not live yet probably, but in 1983,
I was four. Go ahead.
we were playing against Purdue. I was playing in the you know, the Triple H Metrodome and made a tackle against Purdue like 3 weeks into the season. I hyperextended my elbow. And the rest of the year I played with a hockey elbow pad and it was the only thing that that would help me. The problem is I didn't decide to actually fix this thing until just this past Friday. So
really?
it's one of those things where, you know, I've never liked to have downtime. I just can't stand it because it drives me crazy not to be able to get into the gym to do my thing. I try to do it 6 days a week if I can. And every once in a while, a break, sure, here and there. But the longest break I have ever taken in the last maybe 45 years was probably a week. So to be out as long as I need to be out because of this surgery. So I went in, the guy looked at me, he goes, I can't believe you've waited this long. I won't say
the
doctor's
name. What was
the
actual injury?
Well, so I hyperextended my elbow.
Yeah, what was the actual injury?
I had bone chips everywhere floating around in my elbow for the last 41 years.
Oh,
and every once in a while it would not feel very good, but it was getting a little bit weaker. I also had an issue with my ulna nerve that they had to reposition the nerve on my elbow. So, I mean, this is just craziness, right?
Wow.
But, and you know, it's one of those things.
So what's your recovery look like?
Well, it's a good and a bad thing, Dave, when you can block out pain, right? I mean, it's great if you can do it, but it's also not very smart, you know? So I'm not trying to advocate for anybody to ever do this. It's a really bad idea, but all this time I've just done that. So I think it's just a few weeks. I've got a sling. I will be out of that sling as fast as the second he says I can take that off for good, I will. Believe me, I hate it. But Did a surgery on the elbow. It was like an hour and a half or whatever it was, and a lot to fix in there. But this guy only does elbows. I love that. I love the fact that in this world of orthopedic surgery these days, you've got a guy who does knees, a guy who does just thumbs, fingers, elbows, whatever, shoulders. I mean, they are so zoned in on exactly what they do. And this guy, this is all he does. I won't say the doctor's name because I don't know if I should or not, but he was unbelievable. He did a fantastic job, so it was great.
Were you completely under for it, or did you have to stay awake?
Oh, man, I was completely under. I actually asked to be. I wanted to get the thing where they put you a shot in your shoulder, so it basically frozen up for quite a while.
Yeah, the nerve block.
Because I wanted to watch it. I really did. I don't know if you knew this, but I was pre-med. I was always interested. I thought I wanted to be probably on the orthopedic side because of my sports side. So I always wanted to do that. My dad was more in the very difficult time of under anything between your neck and down to your waist. He would do it. But, you know, that was transplantation and all the rest of it. I just wanted to fix athletes up. So I got pretty far, but I never got all the way. But it was it was an experience, and this is, you know, I don't know how many surgeries I've had now, but it's probably somewhere between 10 and 15 total. So, Dave, I've always told everybody, too, I say, look, you have no idea when you say athletes are overpaid when you know that you've got the head injuries, which are awful. But on top of that, the knees, the ankles, you know, you watch guys walk around on the field that are only 40 years old, 50 years old. That have, you know, limps and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
It takes a very big toll that doesn't go away. So there is a lot of sacrifice and you know, the money is great. It's gotten way better, but it's still pretty brutal. I mean, you're giving up a lot when you play for a long period of time.
I'm amazed that you were able to not only just play, but continue to live an active lifestyle with that. I mean, I tore my bicep tendon in May. Mm. I had surgery like 4 days later, and I was in a sling, which I hated it. But like, I couldn't imagine continuing to try to do anything with my – and my tear was down in the forearm, so that has to have – you know, my doctor said you have to have surgery because if it happens up near the shoulder, which I'm sure you know because you probably experienced it or had other people you know experience it, Pete, that's the kind – that's one that can – that you can hold off on or even not have to have.
Yeah.
But the fact that you were able to block it out, and I'm sure as a 23-year-old kid, you felt you were invincible, no problem.
Right.
But man, that has to be painful every day after that.
Oh, the last 6 or 8 years have been really, really bad. You know, you still go to the gym, you still do everything that you could do or whatever and just try to block it out. But like I said, that's not smart, and I'm not endorsing doing that. As a matter of fact, I'm telling people, don't do that. Don't do that.
Don't do
it.
Get
it fixed.
Don't listen to Pete. No, listen to Pete. Get it fixed. You are, my friend, too legit to quit. I agree with that. Great song choice, Josh. We'll take a quick break. Hour number two of The Huddle coming at you next.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Who needs an amusement park when you're a Vikings fan? What a roller coaster week for your Minnesota Vikings, and we'll cover it all for you this morning. Let's start back all the way at the beginning, or at today, and then we'll work our way back throughout the show, because this morning the Vikings signed Stephon Gilmore, and this is, I think, Pete, a pretty smart signing and a low risk cornerback that is coming off a year in Dallas, in which, you know, listen, it's not his best. He's 33 years old, but I think immediately upgrades this defense with the signing and signals to me that I think this franchise truly believes, and the front office truly believes that they're approaching their window here to win. Whether it's this year, whether it's next year, if he plays well, then maybe you sign him again. If he's not what he was of old, then it's no big deal other than the $10 million it costs, I think, to sign him for the year. But he's coming off a pretty good year. Pete, what do you think about this?
Is he a geriatric at this point? No, I'm just kidding.
33. I mean,
when you do look at our secondary, though, you've got Harrison Smith, right? He's 35 years mm-hmm. old. Let's call Stephon Gilmore 34 because he will be in 1 month. You know, it's interesting, though, Dave. It's not a huge risk to take this guy. I think he's great. He's had a really good career. Is he at the end of his career? I'd say he's really close. Just because of age, and it does start to happen, and it happens pretty quickly, I think, for a lot of the players. But the only thing that sort of is a little bit of a pushback for me, they paid him a nice chunk of money. I didn't know that they'd have that kind of room to be able to afford it, but I know it's $7 million guaranteed, but it's a $10 million contract. It's a one-year deal, right? So it's, we didn't want to pay Dalvin Cook when he was 28 years old, but we're paying for a 34-year-old cornerback. I don't know. I that's where my balance goes back and forth, and I'm trying to figure out what the general manager oftentimes is doing as far as some of the decision making with the Vikings, whether it be draft or sometimes with just the players themselves on age and some of the reasons that we hear that we lose players, but all of a sudden when we really need one, we gain a player. I like his athleticism. Is he the same guy he was 5-6 years ago at New England? Absolutely not. But he did have a good year with Dallas last year.
And to me, this is very much a Patrick Peterson signing, right? When they signed him in 2021, I believe he was 31 years old. Yeah. He had two pretty good seasons for the Minnesota Vikings before he went to Pittsburgh in 2023. And I think, if I'm correct, his last season here overlapped with Brian Flores. Is that right? Let's see here. I'm just trying to look real quick. So 23. Yeah, 23. Sounds his about last right. season yeah. here overlapped. No, sorry. They did not play together. They did not coach and play together. However, Patrick Peterson, I think, outperformed what they hoped. He had a great two seasons here. I believe that Stephon Gilmore, I know they were – Flores and he were together in New England. Flores was not – he was a linebackers coach at the time, so I don't know how much they had together crossover. But he had some really good years in New England. But he's coming off a last year in 2023. He had 68 tackles and two interceptions.
Yeah.
No, I mean, is it his 2019 Patriots season when he had six picks or 2016 when he had five for the Bills? No. But is he immediate upgrade over what they had, especially considering some of the injuries? I think so. Did you really want, Fabian Moreau? Did you really want Dwight McLaughlin starting game one? No, of course you didn't. But now you got Stephon Gilmore. And again, I think to me this signals, hey, we know that we're in the window. We know that this is a flyer. Maybe this works. Maybe it doesn't. It's an expensive flyer. It is. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to try to be competitive this year, and we haven't talked about this a lot, but if this is really, Kwesi Dofamensa and Kevin O'Connell are getting out of that, hey, we're new here window mm-hmm. to the you better start winning or else window. And I think to me, this signals that they're getting closer to that they need to start thinking about what they're going to do here and if they're going to be able to have some longevity here as well.
Yeah, and obviously we had to make some kind of a move, in my opinion. So I'm not saying this is a terrible move. And it's a must do move. So it puts us in a position. 34 years old ish does kind of make me a little bit apprehensive. I know he had a good year last year, but that let's be honest. The Dallas mm-hmm. Cowboys defense everywhere was good last year. I mean, their outside linebackers, their blitzers, their defensive line, their defense was really one of the pieces of the puzzle that I think was very, very good for Dallas. So it puts us in a pretty interesting spot. We needed to get somebody. And if this is the best that we had out there, I think it's fine. And I, like I say, a lot of it for me is just, wow, that's just, it seems like a fairly extreme amount of money. And I know it's a 1 year. We're just taking a rental, right? Because we've had so many issues and we've always drafted corners and we just have had so little success that it's been absolutely incredible. But I think he can step in there and play. At what level is he going to get beat once in a while? He might be, just because the receivers in the NFL right now, as a group, probably is the best we have ever seen in the NFL, I think.
So when we signed, when the Vikings signed Patrick Peterson a couple years ago, does Stephon Gilmore, in your mind, if you're comparing the two of them, mm-hmm. Who is Gilmore as good as Peterson was when he came in, or do you feel like he's farther along? Age-wise, obviously, it's a difference. But in terms of skill and what they're coming into?
I think they're very, very similar. I thought Patrick Peterson, they gave up on him a little bit too early. Not the Vikings, previous teams. So I liked the fact that we got – matter of fact, I was disappointed when we decided to walk away from Patrick Peterson because I thought he was I thought he was one of the better players we've had. I liked his height. I liked his speed. I liked his ability, his ball skills. All of that, I think, made him an incredible corner for a really long time. And, you know, I feel like Stephon Gilmore is close to that. I don't think he's at the level when we first got Patrick Peterson up here. I don't think he's there right now where Patrick Peterson was when we grabbed him.
But to me, one of the things that excites me, and I should also add, if you out there, do you like this signing? Do you hate this signing? Does it change anything about how you feel the season is going to go? The StylesFinancial.com talk and text line is 651-461-9226. I would love to see, I want to see what Brian Flores can do with him. I mean, you and I both agree, Pete, and we've talked about this, that in terms of a defensive mind, Brian Flores is one of the best in the NFL and does things with players that I think other guys can't do. So I'm excited to see where Gilmore fits into his scheme.
One other thing I'd love to point out is, and I think everybody saw it yesterday, but it was great to see Lewis Cine finally show us a little something, right? I mean, it's been years, and I know he had the injury, but at some point you got to say, okay, well, what can he do for us? And he looked really, really solid, fast, aggressive. He played probably his best NFL game. I know it's preseason, but his best NFL game that he's ever played. I think that maybe... Is he a guy who's making that next step? I don't know.
Against, unfortunately, a Browns team, and I don't think anybody played many of their starters yesterday. In fact, I think there were more fans in the stands than starters on the field, or more starters on the bench than fans in the stands, I should say, because it looked like a quarter full, which is not great. I thought Lewis Cine played better. When we talked to Alec Lewis last week, and he thought that it just might be time to cut ties with him. From a coaching standpoint, Pete, and you've been kind of in this scenario, this is a tough spot now to put the coaching staff, because up until this point, he has not shown any flashes like this. And all of a sudden, in the second preseason game, he does. So now you start to doubt, right? Do we cut this guy loose and have him go to another team? Or has he shown enough? But it's just one game.
Yeah.
Right. So what do you make of this now?
It's one game, but at the same time, and I think we've heard our head coach talk about this like so many others, but he's talking about looking at these guys in practice, looking at these guys when they do have like the drills that they were doing against the Cleveland Browns and some of the aggressiveness that was going on with the Cleveland Browns. I think when you look at all of that, that's what the coach is looking at, the GM's looking at. They'll get together and decide whether or not somebody's going to be on the team. It's not about just that, to your point. It's not just about what he did during the game in Cleveland, although that was good. And it was against, you know, obviously the starters are all sitting on the sideline, but I think at least he finally showed us something. Yeah. He showed us when he's on the field that he actually is the player maybe that we drafted a few years ago. So I think it's something where he finally made a step. And I've been as critical as anybody about that draft pick anyway.
Yeah.
But at least he has stepped up and showed us a little something. And if he's done enough at some of the practices, some of the skills that they are working on when they're down there with Cleveland, and he showed a little something, he might have a good argument on why he shouldn't be a big part of this team.
We can talk about that with Matthew Collar, who's going to join us coming up next as we continue to break down the giant preseason game number two for the Vikings. No, I'm just kidding. It's so not. And I listen, I'm happy football's back, and I'm happy that the preseason is here. But there's just so little sometimes. And clearly after the week the Vikings have had, Kevin O'Connell's like, no, we're not playing almost any starters tomorrow. We've Addison's down with an injury. McCarthy's gone for the year. I mean, it's like, all right, everybody's out. Everybody's gone. Put in a couple guys, and let's just get out of here without any injuries tomorrow. So today we will chat with Matthew Collar coming up next. We'll talk more about the Vikings victory yesterday in Cleveland. If you have thoughts on that and on the signing of Stephen Gilmore, hit us up on the stylesfinancial.com talk and text line 651-461-9226. Matthew Collar joins us around the corner. We'll be right back. Matthew Collar, our good friend, Purple Insider, joins us this morning. Matthew, I want to start with, good morning, by the way, joining us in the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. I want to start with the news, the big news of Stephon Gilmore. Your immediate reaction when you heard about this morning was?
I was not very surprised. I knew that from what I had heard that they really wanted Stephon Gilmore and that their offer was significantly higher than any other team for him. And then after I was in Cleveland for 2 days watching joint practices and watching the Vikings defense absolutely maul the Cleveland Browns offense over and over and over again in practice, I thought maybe they'll even up that offer a little bit more for Stephon Gilmore because this defense is truly, you know, a good cornerback play away from being a top 10 type of defense. And with Brian Flores, you know, being able to get some more talent in here, Andrew Van Ginkle, Blake Cashman, the way they've developed some players, Ivan Pace has looked really good so far in training camp. They've got a little more depth up front at the edge rusher and on the interior of the defensive line, but really just that one spot. And Byron Murphy is a solid NFL corner. It's the other outside spots a little in question with Shaq Griffin not practicing at all since the second day of training camp. So I thought, you know, this team probably realizes if it's going to compete for the playoffs, it has to do it a little more with defense than it has in some previous seasons. And Stephon Gilmore, his last three seasons of play, I know he's older, but his last three seasons of play have all been above average. He's played 2,000 snaps the last two seasons, so he's really aged well for a cornerback, and they must believe that it's still there with Stephon Gilmore.
Yeah, it's a little bit surprising, the amount of money. Do you think that I understand what you're saying completely, but did we need to overpay probably the rest of the league to the levels that we did, or was that not ever a worry?
Well, I think they did need to overpay because when you think about a player of Stephon Gilmore's stature, defensive MVP, he's been around for a long time, and he's been very good the last few seasons. I think, you know, there's probably other teams that are thought of as a little more Super Bowl contenders than the Vikings that put in smaller offers for him that don't necessarily need him but wouldn't mind having him. The Vikings are more in a position of needing him based on what they have in the secondary. And he really doesn't have to. At his age, he's made enough money in his career. He could just say, yeah, you know, whatever. Or I'll go ring chasing and try to sign with Kansas City or something. But why it doesn't really matter is because the Vikings have a lot of cap space that they're not going to use after this. And it's a one-year contract. So you give him his $10 million now, and then he becomes a free agent at the end of the year. It has no impact whatsoever on the long term. And they had this cap space. We're about to start the season, so it's not like they were going to make seven more signings. They just used available cap space that they had, and the way that they've set up their cap over the last two off seasons was another thing that allowed them to be able to do this. Because before, you know, the last few seasons when Kirk was here, they were scraping the bottom of the barrel. How can we make an extra $2 million to sign somebody? So now they're in a little better shape there, and they're able to bring in someone who recently has been a very, very good player.
Matthew Collar joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Matt, this signals at least that we understand the front office feels like this team can be very competitive in 2024, despite the fact that they lost their rookie quarterback, J.J. McCarthy, this week. To me, in my mind, I was like, okay, this is a bummer for him, but I never felt, and I've said this all along, I felt like from the beginning of the season, this is going to be Sam Darnold's job, and he was going to have to lose it some way at some point. Does the fact that J.J. McCarthy is out of the mix now, does it change everything for this front office, or do you get the feeling like, okay, that they feel like, okay, this is kind of a blip, but he's going to be okay, and we were looking at him for the future anyway?
Yeah, I mean, as far as it relates to Stephon Gilmore, just timeline-wise, they already had made an offer to him before J.J. McCarthy was known to be out for the season. So they were already thinking that they should be competitive. And the owners of this team have been extremely clear. Every time Mark Wilf has talked to us, He said, this is not a rebuild type of thing. We want this team to compete for the division. They know the division's tough, but the expectation is to make the playoffs, even if, you know, the Vegas odds don't think that that's going to happen for this team. But, you know, I think that what J.J. McCarthy provided was a button to push for Kevin O'Connell, where, all right, season's kind of going bad with Sam Darnold. Let's get J.J. McCarthy in there and, you know, bring that excitement that goes along with it. And then if he looks pretty good, which I think he would have through the end of the season, then you can always point to that, regardless of what your record is, and say, we're on our way, trust us, give it time, all those things. And, of course, you know, keep the fan base excited to see J.J. McCarthy and everything else. Now that is off the table, and you're just riding the Sam Darnold roller coaster. And that it does, I think it does add a little bit more pressure because you don't have this thing where you can always say, but the future, am I right? Now, I think McCarthy having that great game before he got injured was still very helpful because Minnesota got to see what J.J. McCarthy had been doing in practice over and over again on a daily basis and why the Vikings are comfortable calling him their franchise future quarterback. But at the same time, like that as a coach, you want to have that extra thing. And now you just really don't. You just have to ride Sam Darnold. And when I saw him practicing against the Browns, we saw the ups and downs that you would have expected for Sam Darnold for his entire career. Some really great throws and some unexplainable interceptions. And I know the Browns have a really good defense, but it's going to be a little bit different, I think, than watching Kirk Cousins in previous years.
So real quick, Matt, I know we're getting up against the time frame, but I'm just really curious, as far as you're there every day, you see these guys, you understand the team very well. Who stands out for you? Is there anybody or any couple of guys that you say, you know what, this guy has made the next step and it's going to be really fun to watch him this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think like you're probably kind of pointing a little more toward younger players who are improving. I mentioned Ivan Pace. I've noticed that. But as far as what's really popped out to me, you know, that number 18 is pretty good. You mean you should get a jersey of his. But what has really stood out to me in particular is the edge rushers, just the entire unit. I think that unit might be one of the best in the entire NFL. Jihad Ward is a guy who I'm interested to see if he makes the team, but Patrick Jones has looked improved from last season in maybe a new role, but Dallas Turner has stood out a ton throughout this entire thing. And Andrew Van Ginkel and Jonathan Grenard, those guys were not on the marquee because they drafted a quarterback this offseason, but those were two huge signings for them, and they were wreaking havoc in Cleveland. They've been causing problems for the Vikings offense throughout training camp, and I think that having that be much deeper than it was before is all respect to Danielle Hunter, but Danielle was asked to do everything all the time. Mm-hmm. Now they have a bunch of guys that they can mix and match at that position that could make them a lot better in terms of a overall pass rush versus what they were last year.
I'm not stealing Pete's question, his take, but I want to borrow it. He talked earlier about Lewis Cine and what he did yesterday. Had a much better game, probably one of his best games, I think, that we've seen him play despite the injury. Does one game do enough to move him up far enough on the depth chart to make the cut, or do you still think when the preseason ends he's on the outside of the bubble?
Yeah, I don't believe that's going to put him on the team. I mean, maybe it's possible because Kwesi Adofo-Mensah drafted him. He wants to try that one more time, but there hasn't really been any feeling that he's making progress in practice. We've seen him get, you know, a ton of reps, but anytime, I think they want to give him every opportunity because he's gotten a ton of reps, but it's all been with the second team, nothing with the first team. And when a guy is getting a sack in the fourth quarter of a preseason game that the coach does not care about, he cared about the joint practices. I think it tells you where that player stands. And, you know, a tipped interception, a sack where no one blocks you, I'm not really sure that these things are enough to move the needle with Lewis Cine. But it is funny because they have one of the best safety units in the entire NFL. He's just probably not going to be included in it.
Matthew Coller, Purple Insider. Thanks, buddy. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks, Matthew.
Yep, you too, guys.
Thanks, Matthew Coller. Good insight. Good stuff, Lewis Cine. Pete, I mean, we wanted it, right? We were hoping that maybe he'd make the cut, but that's a great point. You know, fourth quarter, what are you going to do?
Yeah, that's kind of what we thought, I think. Yeah. You know, I mean, I think we were just wondering, you know, up front and close, what did he really look like? And mm-hmm. I think Matthew just basically gave us the lowdown right there.
Well, and interesting, too, that he said, and I think you probably know a lot about more about this than I do, the fact that you go to Cleveland for these joint practices, that's more important to the coaching staff than what's done in a preseason game.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah, the joint practices, that's where the analysis really happens. It's the time where you've got everybody's full. They have the full uniforms on. They got the shoulder pads actually on. They're not just standing around in their helmets, you know, in the warm weather. And they actually can do some of the stuff that they can do, you know, one-on-one and everything else. And that's where I think you either make or break on the team.
We'll take a quick break, come back, and we will do the fast break. You're listening to The Huddle on A3O with Josh.
Yeah, with me. That's
you like that?
It's cute. That's
that
cute.
Was good.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, with 6 weeks left in the regular season, the AL Central is slowly getting tighter and tighter between the Twins and the Guardians. We'll talk more about this, obviously, more in depth later in the show. But after Cleveland falling to the Brew Crew last night, the Twins are now just two games back. Dave, we'll start with you on this one. Whether it's injuries, failure to score, with runners in scoring position, what in your mind is the biggest obstacle facing this Twins team from getting the Central pennant?
Consistency. 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 I listen, they're two games back. They've been 2.5 to two games back for what seems like months now. But this team has to put it together for the entire time. You know, it's like win three, lose one. Win three out of five, lose another one. But the schedule, if I'm recalling, and I don't have it in front of me, but this last month of the season for them is a really winnable schedule. And so they have to be able to be consistent with their play, with the pitching, with the hitting, with all of it. But it's consistency. That's what it is. They have to get on a streak here, and then you have to hope that Cleveland runs into a roadblock at some point.
And Josh, I'll just add this. I totally agree with Dave on the consistency side of it. I think the problem that we still look at every time we look at the Twins, we get excited, but we look at the Twins and we say, well, okay, well, have they beat teams that have a winning record? And the answer is generally no. We have beat some. We beat Kansas City. We did pretty well with them, and Cleveland. But the reality has been, when you look around, we've just not really come through. I think the pitching's got to be a little bit better. You just wonder, did we do enough when we got to that trade deadline? Did we get aggressive enough? A lot of people didn't want to change it. I personally did. I still think that they needed a pitcher, but some of the pitching is improving for sure. I mean, and Bailey looks fantastic, but that's just one name.
There you go.
There you go.
Hopefully they can get the W today. We'll see what happens there. I know, unless you are Mr. Matthew Collar and are doing this for a living, not a lot of people really dive too deep into preseason football and probably honestly haven't watched much of it. I know I haven't. I don't know about you guys, but we're now 2 weeks into it for the NFL, and before you know it, the games will actually start to count and matter. Pete, we'll start with you here. Which quarterback has popped out to you the most? And if you haven't watched a whole lot, which quarterback are you most excited to see this season as far as rookie QBs?
Well, ironically, we were kind of kicking that around, and I can tell you that Bo Nix is everything that I thought he was at Oregon. He looks great. Now, granted, it's preseason. We always have to qualify and say, yes, it's preseason. This isn't, you're not going against all the starters and all the rest of it. But as rookies, these guys coming in, I think he and Caleb Williams, obviously first pick in the draft for a reason, but Caleb Williams has looked great. He's done a great job of spreading the ball around. And it just tells you a little bit more about how I think the division with the Vikings is a lot tougher than people probably realize. When you look at the quarterback play within our own division, it's impressive. And I think some of these young quarterbacks are living up to everything we expected that they were going to do, even going out to Washington and looking at how their quarterback is playing. Another young guy has done a really nice job. Have they put up a lot of points? Not really, but I think that they've played very well. So I think there's reason to be excited about Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix and all of the different quarterbacks that are rookies. They're really impressive so far.
Honestly, this, and you're 100% right, this might be, and we were just talking about this might be the most exciting class of quarterbacks that we've seen in a really, really long time, at least for my money, Pete. I'm super excited to see him. I've said this all along. I wanted Michael Penix Jr. here in Minnesota, so it's not I'm not going off the board by saying that I want to see how he looks in Atlanta. I think he had one game. He was 9 of 17, 104 yards, played about a quarter. Atlanta's apparently seen what they need to see out of him. They love him, but they got to now see, and we were talking about this, they got to see what they have in Kirk Cousins. Like, you got to see where this Achilles is, where is his health. And clearly they're not like gung-ho, yep, he's going to be the guy, or else they wouldn't have signed Michael Penix Jr. So I am really intrigued to watch that quarterback battle, and would not surprise me the least bit if we see Penix Jr. at some point this season.
Yeah.
We're going to circle back around to baseball just real quick for this one. With the 2024 Olympics well behind us now, about a week out, we look ahead to L.A. in 2028, where we will see the return of baseball. MLB is still kind of up in the air. Dave, do you think Rob Manfred will permit this to take place, given the extensive 162 and subsequently almost 200 games, if you count postseason for MLB returning? Do you think it'll happen?
He should. I don't know if it will, but he should, because it's great for the game. It is great for building fan support. And let's be honest, Major League Baseball needs to increase their fan support. We've talked extensively. They've done so much in the past few years to speed up the game, to make it a better fan experience. If they miss out on the opportunity to showcase baseball on the world stage and what the U.S. can do, that's a huge miss for him. It helps in every other sport. The NBA, granted, it's not in season, but the WNBA does it. Again, half the games, but they make it work. I think once every 4 years, extending the season by a little bit, or maybe starting it earlier, or figuring something else out to showcase baseball and Major League's best on the world stage, if they don't take that opportunity, it is a massive miss on my part.
I agree with you, Dave. And when you talk about commissioners, I actually have the most respect for Rob Manfred of all of them, through the NFL. I can't really speak as much to the NHL, but the NFL and NBA and what happens in Major League Baseball, I think Rob Manfred has really done a great job, like you said, speeding up the game, making things a little bit tighter, a little bit more exciting for fans, grabbing some of the younger people in there as folks that want to be a part of Major League Baseball and watching it. He has outdone, I think, every other commissioner that exists. So pretty excited about what he's been doing. I think he'll make the right decision.
And last but not least, next week, it's already here, gentlemen. Week zero starts next week. Didn't know that was a thing until I think last year. I was so excited for college football to start, and I said, oh, wait, there's nobody really playing. Cool. But with that being said, I don't remember last time we had this much of a shakeup among the different conferences. So I'll just kind of give you this, broader question. Which conference do you think is the strongest going into this new season? We have Big Ten, SEC, ACC, Pacific Conference. Everything's just being shaken up heading into this new phase of college football. And obviously you have the college football playoff being implemented in a more expanded version this year. So which conference do you think will have the strongest showing this time come January?
Dave?
Oh, you want me to go first?
Sure.
I don't know. I'll say the Big Ten simply because they just have so many teams that are good. Yeah. I mean, you got Ohio State, Michigan, you're adding Oregon, you're adding like UCLA, all these teams that are legitimately really great teams. I know I've all long been an SEC guy. I truly have. Like, I've always said SEC is the best conference in the country, but I really think now the Big Ten pushes that just a little bit. But I guess it's probably still, long answer to say, SEC still to me will always be the number one in college football, but Big Ten's right there.
Well, the SEC, I've got this one. It'll shock you guys a little bit probably, but I've got Ole Miss and Georgia playing in the national championship game at the end of the season. So and Ole Miss being a long shot, but really? SEC is incredible. I will say this. The Big Ten upgrade when you put in Washington, Oregon, USC, UCLA is absolutely amazing. And what we've got with Penn State already, we and Michigan and Ohio State, Michigan, we really don't know what we've got exactly, but certainly we do with Ohio State. Ohio State will be incredibly, they will have the closest shot, I think, in the Big Ten to getting to the national championship game.
And there you go. Well done.
Josh, great questions. Thank you.
I try.
What's up? Is the music going again?
No. The dead silence means we're done. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We're done. Coming up next, Pete, what happened to you? We'll talk about it coming up next. We see somber music. I know. We're sad. Hour one is in the books. If you missed any of our first hour, including Matt Collar, who came on at 10:20, check out our podcasts wherever you get your podcasts or on the free Odyssey app. Quick note, you get an extra half hour of us today. I know. You're excited. We'll be on until 12:30 before Inside Twins picks us up after that. Thank you, sir.
So Johnny Pete, Cash.
I think it was Johnny Cash, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's Hurt. It's the Nine Inch Nails version of a cover of Hurt by Johnny Cash because awesome. Pete hurt himself.
Nine Inch. Yeah, well, I was going to ask you, like, we haven't even talked about this off air yet, so this is new to me too. What happened to you this week?
I proved my stubbornness over the last 41 years, because in 1983, Dave, you were not alive yet probably, but in 1983,
I was four. Go ahead.
We were playing against Purdue. I was playing in the Triple H Metrodome, and made a tackle against Purdue. Like 3 weeks into the season, I hyperextended my elbow, and the rest of the year I played with a hockey elbow pad, and it was the only thing that I could that would help me. The problem is, I didn't decide to actually fix this thing until just this past Friday. So
really?
it's one of those things where, you know, I've never liked to have downtime. I just can't stand it because it drives me crazy not to be able to get into the gym to do my thing. I try to do it 6 days a week if I can. And every once in a while, a break, sure, here and there. But the longest break I have ever taken in the last maybe 45 years was probably a week. So to be out as long as I need to be out because of this surgery. So I went in, the guy looked at it, he goes, I can't believe you've waited this long. I won't say
what
the doctor's
was the actual
name.
Injury?
Well, so I hyperextended my elbow.
Yeah, what was the actual injury?
I had bone chips everywhere floating around in my elbow for the last 41 years.
Oh,
and every once in a while it would not feel very good, but it was getting a little bit weaker. I also had an issue with my ulnar nerve that they had to reposition the nerve on my elbow. So, I mean, this is just craziness, right?
Wow.
But, and you know, it's one of those things.
What's your recovery look like?
Well, it's a good and a bad thing, Dave, when you can block out pain, right? I mean, it's great if you can do it, but it's also not very smart, you know? So I'm not trying to advocate for anybody to ever do this. It's a really bad idea, but all this time I've just done that. So I think it's just a few weeks. I've got a sling. I will be out of that sling as fast as the second he says I can take that off for good, I will. Believe me, I hate it. But Did a surgery on the elbow. It was like an hour and a half or whatever it was, and a lot to fix in there. But this guy only does elbows. I love that. I love the fact that in this world of orthopedic surgery these days, you've got a guy who does knees, a guy who does just thumbs, fingers, elbows, whatever, shoulders. I mean, they are so zoned in on exactly what they do. And this guy, this is all he does. I won't say the doctor's name because I don't know if I should or not, but he was unbelievable. He did a fantastic job. So it was great.
Were you completely under for it, or did you have to stay awake?
Oh, man, I was completely under. I actually asked to be – I wanted to get the thing where they put you a shot in your shoulder so it basically frozen up for quite a while.
Yeah, the nerve block,
because I wanted to watch it. I really did. I mean, I was – I don't know if you knew this, but I was pre-med. I was always interested. I thought I wanted to be probably on the orthopedic side because of my sports side. So I always wanted to do that. My dad was more in the very difficult time of under anything between your neck and down to your waist. He would do it. But, you know, that was transplantation and all the rest of it. I just wanted to fix athletes up. So I got pretty far, but I never got all the way. But it was an experience, and this is, you know, I don't know how many surgeries I've had now, but it's probably somewhere between 10 and 15 total. So, Dave, I've always told everybody, too, I say, look, you have no idea when you say athletes are overpaid when you know that you've got the head injuries, which are awful. But on top of that, the knees, the ankles, you know, you watch guys walk around on the field that are only 40 years old, 50 years old. that have, you know, limps and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
It takes a very big toll that doesn't go away. So there is a lot of sacrifice, and you know, the money is great. It's gotten way better, but it's still pretty brutal. I mean, you're giving up a lot when you play for a long period of time.
I'm amazed that you were able to not only just play, but continue to live an active lifestyle with that. I mean, I tore my bicep tendon in May. Mm. I had surgery like 4 days later, and I was in a sling, which I hated it. But like, I couldn't imagine continuing to try to do anything with my and my tear was down in the forearm, so that has to have, you know, my doctor said you have to have surgery because if it happens up near the shoulder, which I'm sure you know because you probably experienced it or had other people you know experience it, Pete, that's the kind, that's one that can, that you can hold off on or even not have to have.
Yeah.
But the fact that you were able to block it out, and I'm sure as a 23-year-old kid, you felt you were invincible, no problem.
Right.
But man, that has to be painful every day after that.
Oh, the last 6 or 8 years have been really, really bad. You know, you still go to the gym, you still do everything that you could do or whatever, and just try to block it out. But like I said, that's not smart, and I'm not endorsing doing that. As a matter of fact, I'm telling people, don't do that. Don't do that.
Don't do
it.
Get
it fixed.
Don't listen to Pete. No, listen to Pete. Get it fixed. You are, my friend, too legit to quit. I agree with that. Great song choice, Josh. We'll take a quick break. Hour number two of The Huddle coming at you next.